Welcome in to the Podium Game Podcast. I'm Brian Gibberman, joined by Kevin Farragan from Nylon Calculus. You also did some stuff with the Mavs. What did you do with the Mavs exactly?
I can't talk too much about it, but it was mostly a lot of actually watching tape or watching film, if I can say that without sounding I don't know what the right word is, but sometimes saying, "Oh, I was watching tape," kind of sounds silly to me. I was watching games.
You were watching basketball, so you got you were. Did you like it? I'm assuming you can answer that, and then we'll just move on to the finals.
Yeah, it was good. Definitely, I think the best part about it was interacting with the people that were involved, and I made a point to swing over to Sloan. I didn't actually go to the conference, but I went and sort of saw some people during the Sloan conference, and that was fun. And being able to say, you know, I was with a team or whatever, that was definitely cool. But the actual work was pretty interesting, and I would say that most of the things that you would think would be looked at are people. There's somebody looking at them. At least that was the case with the Mavericks.
All right, so now we're not going to get Kevin in trouble in case he ever gets another opportunity again. We'll move on quickly here. All right, game one of the NBA Finals is going to be tonight, and game two will be Sunday. The first two are at Oracle Arena. Then we shift to Cleveland for games three and four on Wednesday. And when's game four? My schedule cuts off. ESPN, you're terrible at this. Let's see. Game four is Friday, so we got games one and two Thursday, this Thursday, tonight, Sunday. Games three and four in Cleveland are Wednesday and Friday. Oh, where to start? So much here. Let's start here. I was looking at the Cavs and how they're all shooting. It seems like there's some regression in store coming for them, right? Again, playing against a better defense than they were in their three series with the East.
Yeah, I think so. They have been shooting well above their season-long percentages and their most of their players' career percentages. I would say that kind of whenever you see that kind of screams out that, you know, that maybe they're getting some aberrational results. The tricky part of that is that that's been the case over how many games have they played? What is it?
Four, six, 16. Oh no, 18. Wait, God, am I off?
They
four,
play, they
four.
14 games, I think.
It's four. Four and six.
Yeah, so 14. They played 14 games so far. With that being the case, so it's possible that it keeps up for another seven games. That's one of the things about small sample sizes in the playoffs. But I would say, if you're looking at areas where they might be coming in looking a little better than they actually are, I would say that is definitely got to be a concern for them.
Well, now we know why I don't work at Nylon Calculus. I can't add up 8 plus 6, so that would be detrimental. Is part of that, you really think they're running, when you watch them, maybe they're shooting a little above their head, but their offense is really clicking that well right now. It's more about what they're doing offensively than playing against poor defenses.
I wouldn't say that it's more about their offense. I mean, I think they've done some things differently than they did in the regular season, for sure. I think that playing Channing Frye more minutes has opened things up, and anytime you have essentially four shooters around LeBron, that's really going to give those shooters and LeBron himself more space to operate in and, you know, that allows some people to feel more comfortable shooting. I think J.R. Smith is like one of the only guys who seems to shoot better with a hand in his face and when he's wide open. But even he's been, you know, going pretty bananas in the playoffs with the extra space. So I think it's a little bit their offense, but you know, and how that's shifted a little bit in the playoffs. But I think that my intuition is that it's much more likely that it's kind of an unsustainable hot streak. But unsustainable hot streaks are, you know, part of the thing with the playoffs is that there's only so many games, and sometimes those hot streaks can continue. But you know, if you were asking me to predict it, I would think that they wouldn't continue to shoot that well, especially given the nature of the Warriors' defense. I know that they did very well against the Hawks' defense, and the Hawks' defense was, I think, second in the league this year. But I think that there's a big difference being second in the league in terms of defense when you're playing other teams that don't have LeBron James for the vast majority of those 82 games versus playing against LeBron in a seven-game series, because the Hawks just didn't have anybody that could really do very much of anything with LeBron, and that allowed those open shooters. I think that the Warriors are the team most suited to dealing with LeBron just because they have that army of long-armed winged players that are pretty strong in terms of being able to handle him, trying to back them down. Nobody's going to guard him perfectly, but you know, they have the best chance, I think, of limiting him. And I think that's going to be a real problem for the Cavs to try to get those open looks that they've been feasting on all playoffs.
Lou has been pretty flexible with his lineups based on matchups. Like the Pistons series, he used a bunch of Love at center. The Hawks series, he went away from that. He basically didn't use Love at center at all. And then we really saw a lot of Channing Frye against the Raptors. What do you think is the best way for the Cavaliers to attack the Warriors?
So this is something I've been thinking about a lot essentially since the matchup has been set. And I think that essentially the toughest thing that he's going to have to do is figuring out how to limit the amount of time that Kyrie and Kevin Love play together, whether that means Kevin Love essentially gets the Enes Kanter treatment from last series. That kind of remains to be seen, but I think it's a real problem for them every time Kevin Love is involved in a pick and roll, especially you know, with especially if it's Steph handling the ball. And so I think that's a real issue for them. I think that it's tough to sit Love for too long because he is, I think, probably their second best player. I think he's a better overall player than Kyrie, even though he doesn't touch the ball nearly as much as Kyrie. But there's a lot, and he doesn't get the respect of being their second best player. He gets sat in the fourth quarter a lot, and I think it's largely because it's easier to, I think, politically to sit him, and it's also, I think, more damaging for him to be involved in pick and rolls than it is for Kyrie, because if you have a good big that can kind of correct some of Kyrie's mistakes in the pick and roll, then you can mitigate that, but it's really hard to mitigate it when it's your back line of defense as a big man. So I think he's going to have to stagger those guys somewhat. The other thing I would say is that I really think that they need to do a good job of trying to force Steph off the three-point line, and that is obviously much easier said than done. But when Steph has the ball, and in particular in pick and rolls, I think they need Iman Shumpert to be on him the vast majority of the time. Which is going to be tough because Iman Shumpert hasn't really been as involved, I think, in the playoffs this year as he was last year.
17 minutes per game this year.
Yeah, I think they're going to need a really big series out of him if they want to have any chance of really slowing Steph down. So I think what they need essentially is they need him picking Steph up almost immediately after he crosses half court. I think that they need to not switch everything, which is the strategy that the Thunder went with, and I think it worked fairly well for the Thunder because they have the size and they have the bigs that can, with the exception of Cantor, they have the bigs that can kind of move their feet enough to make that work. If I was them, I would be essentially trying to force Curry off the three-point line and by pressing up on him, and then when they run a pick-and-roll for him, basically icing it. And so trying to get him to step into that two-point range. And I think Greg Popovich, that was essentially how he's defended Curry when he's had to. And, you know, he's had a little bit of success with it. Obviously, no one's had that much success, but I think that's what you try to do, is to just limit his ability to get into the paint, and also try to force him into that mid-range. And you know, he can still kill you from mid-range because he's the best shooter of all time, but it's better that than him setting people up off of drives and or draining, you know, three-pointers in your face.
I'm 100% with you about splitting Kyrie and Love. I just don't see how those two can play together on the court in the series, especially when you're throwing J.R. Smith into that mix also. You're basically leaving LeBron on an island all by himself defensively. But saying that, so when the Warriors go small, do you think the Cavs can get away with playing Tristan and Love together, or do they have to, would you go Tristan at center, or would you downsize even more and go either Fry or Love at center?
So I think if you're going to go, if you feel like you need to have Love on the court, and so it's all about, like, essentially comparative advantage and what you can try to do to maximize the matchup that you have out there. I think that Tristan at center and LeBron at the four, and then their wing guys, is maybe their best lineup against the death lineup, as people like to call it. But I think if you're going to have Love out there, you need to have him basically the instruction has to be, hey, like, you need to offensive rebound the crap out of the ball, because we can't allow them to. And Love has traditionally been a very good offensive rebounder. Since he's been put more on the perimeter, he hasn't been as great at that. But I think, you know, the challenge that's going to be incumbent upon him is to basically, for Lou to say, we need you to be able to space the floor and still crash the glass aggressively. And so I would say that if you're going to have Love on the floor at the five spot, I don't know if defensively you have him at the five spot, because I don't like the matchup of Draymond Green being guarded by Love, but especially because of how involved he is in pick and rolls. But that's kind of a side issue. But in any event, the comparative advantage for them would be then to use Love as a very aggressive offensive rebounder, which is something that the Thunder had some success with, was dominating the offensive glass when the Warriors went small. And Tristan Thompson is obviously a fabulous offensive rebounder. It's one of his two or three skills that he really is a significant positive at. The other being, you know, he's pretty good at defending smaller guys in space. I don't think much of him as a rim protector, and obviously he's not a scorer, but, you know, he has uses, especially in this particular matchup. And so I think if you're going to have Tristan and Kevin together, you have to really say, all right, we have to get the ball back if we miss. And because if you don't, the Warriors are going to get out to the races, they'll get the easy baskets. And then on top of that, you're going to have Kevin Love on the floor defensively, which, you know, is always going to be an issue. So you have to limit the Warriors' ability to even get the ball in the first place.
And they're, what Blatt did strategically last year is, and I didn't think it at the time, but, and I was wrong about it, but that's the best way to attack this Warriors team. But, and instead it seems like the Cavaliers are going to try and beat them playing their game, and I don't see how that works.
Yeah, I think. So, I've heard this a few different places. I think maybe it was on. Maybe Zach Lowe mentioned it on his podcast. I'm not positive. I listen to so many of them that I sometimes forget where I hear the stories. But there was some talk, I think, from, you know, unnamed Warriors executives that they were kind of bummed out that Kyrie and
it was Lowe in a Lowe. It was a story. I think it was in a story that Lowe wrote.
Yeah, but he was kind of bummed out that they were bummed out that Love and Kyrie were out last playoffs because they felt like having, you know, a bunch of defenders around LeBron actually played to the Cavs' advantage a little bit. Obviously, it helped that the defenders that were kind of subbing in there were also, you know, suited to defending the Warriors' best players. So you had Dellavedova on Curry, and he was real handsy and physical with him, which is, aside from, I think, the you know, picking him up early and again trying to ice him into 2-point shots off pick and roll. I think the other thing that Chris Paul and Kirk Heinrich, ironically, a guy that I have always kind of
he's your favorite.
Yeah, I've always kind of been a big critic of his, but he has certain matchups. He's always pretty handsy, but that bothers some guys more than others. And he's always been a decent matchup against Steph because he'll clutch and grab him. And the refs are only going to call it so much. And he does a good job early on of establishing that baseline that he's going to be clutching and grabbing all game. And so I think that Dellavedova was able to do a lot of similar things to what Chris Paul and Kirk Heinrich have done to Curry historically. And I just don't see Kyrie doing those same kinds of things. It's not really the kind of player that he is. But yeah, so, and I also just don't expect that they'll match Kyrie up with Steph all that often. They may start with it, but I think that they'll be quickly disabused of that idea.
I just figured out how the Cavs can win. They have to join Kyrie and Dellavedova together, they have to join Love and Thompson together, and they have to join Shump and JR together. If you fuse those guys all together, then you have the pieces you need to beat the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really the tricky bit with the Warriors is that they have those two-way guys. You know, they have the guys that can dribble, can pass, can shoot, and oh, by the way, are also all, you know, capable defenders. And that's why they're so good. You can try to take away Steph and Clay, but they have guys that have, you know, just enough ability to hit open shots and just enough ability to make plays off the bounce that if you try to take those guys away, they still have enough where they're going to be able to survive that. And, you know, sometimes also, like, it doesn't matter how well you take away Steph and Clay. They're going to do what Clay did in Game 6 and what Steph did in Game 7, which is just hit absurd shots that have no business going in, but they go in because those guys are unbelievable.
Do you know that Richard Jefferson is 52-45-89 right now in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's his, Richard Jefferson, I don't know where this came from.
What is happening?
He looked like he was about ready to be out of the league like 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know how he's doing this. I mean, I guess it pays to play with LeBron to some extent, but yeah, he's been very good.
He's been hitting threes for a couple years, for a few years now. He got better at that. But, I mean, that line is insane. And he's even had, like, a couple dunks and things in these games where he looked younger. Richard Jefferson's a tool. I don't like him.
Richard Jefferson, so he actually might need to play more in this series than people might think, just because I feel like he's not, like, obviously a great defender, but I think, like, the Cavs just don't have that many guys that can really match up with, like, the Warriors' wing depth in the sense of, like, they have...
They could really use 32-year-old Richard Jefferson.
Yeah, yeah, and if he can, you know, for a few games have, like, a throwback Richard Jefferson performance, I think that would be huge for them. But, you know, this is the situation that they're in, is that, you know, we're grasping at straws and kind of thinking, like, you know, maybe if Richard Jefferson hops in a time machine, or maybe if they can combine Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson in some sort of, like, you know, sci-fi experiment, that maybe they'll have a chance. But you know, I don't want to completely discount them. I hate to completely discount LeBron.
I'm going to do that.
But I just don't think they have the pieces. They have some things that they can try that will marginally increase their odds. And you know, with a heavy 3-point shooting team like Golden State, there's always a chance that variance gets them in one or two games where they just go cold and can't make a shot. But that doesn't. They're weird in the sense that, like, very rarely do they have those games where, you know, no one can throw it in the ocean, just because I think they just have so many quality shooters.
It usually happens for, like, one or two games at a time. And we saw it in the Thunder series. We saw it in the Grizzly series. We saw it in the Cavs series last year. They'll go through, like, one or two game stretches, but they've basically broken physics, and it doesn't happen for longer periods.
Yeah, I think, you know, essentially it's maybe, I don't know, it sounds a little bit boring to say, but they're just better. Like, they're just better. And I, you know, typically in the NBA playoffs, the better team usually wins. And that has been the case pretty much throughout these playoffs. Maybe you might say the lone exception being the Thunder over the Spurs. But even then, I think that the Thunder maybe didn't play quite to their capabilities in the regular season this year, and they were figuring a lot of things out. And the Spurs probably overachieved to get to 67 wins or whatever it was. The Spurs also looked better throughout the regular season than they did during the playoffs. It seemed like all of their older guys lost a step at the exact wrong moment. Some of that, I'm sure, is playing against the Thunder, who are maybe the most athletic team in the league. They'll make you look old, even if you're not. But yeah, I think by and large, the best team usually wins. And when the margin is this great, I just don't think that this series, honestly, is going to be as compelling as the Thunder Warriors series was. To me, that was the finals in terms of who were the two best teams. And you know, this is kind of like.
It's a coronation for. It's going to be a Steph coronation, it feels like.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I tweeted it out the other day. My pick, I think, is. I feel like Warriors in five is probably what it's going to be. There might be one LeBron game or one insanely hot shooting game from the Cavs that gets them one. But I just think that the Warriors are significantly better, and I think that's going to be borne out in the series.
I wonder if Kerr. What I would like to see, I would like to see Kerr go for the kill right away. I don't think he's going to, but it'd be fun if he just went green at center right from the jump. He usually waits. This is something that's happened with him. We've seen this in the playoffs. He kind of waits until their backs are against the wall to make an adjustment. He tries to just play it like any old regular season games is his preference. And then when they fall behind, he goes and he's like, all right, it's time. I have to do things to make us win easier. And he changes. I'd like to see him just go for it right away in this.
That's he goes with what's Nate Duncan call him? Kumbaya Kerr. He tries to keep the harmony of the team and plays guys that maybe shouldn't be playing in the playoffs just so that they get a little taste and feel good about themselves. It would be interesting to see them, because like even in against the Thunder, who really pushed them to the absolute brink, he was still playing Anderson Barajal, you know, a few minutes here or there, and it's like you would really kind of think that in a series that tight that there just wouldn't be time for that.
No, that bench stretch in Game 7, it was either at the end of the first quarter or beginning of the second quarter, I forget when it was. I was like, this is going to cost them the series. They're going to lose because they're going to fall behind by like 18 points right now. And you put in too much, but they only got it up to like 13, and then it didn't matter because Steph.
Yeah. I think the other thing that maybe is a partial reason why Kerr insisted on playing some of those guys that, you know, ostensibly you would want to shorten your rotation and get out of there, is maybe he just wanted his best guys fresh down the stretch. And, you know, if that was the reasoning, you know, it's hard to pinpoint causality, but, you know, especially because the Thunder struggled to close games all year, but they did seem to be pretty gassed at the end of every game. You know, some of those games they were able to, I should say they looked gassed in the games that were close at the end. They blew the Warriors out a couple of games, and obviously they weren't tired then, but I think that in the games that were close, Durant in particular, I mean, he played a bunch of games where he played almost, 46, 45, 40, 44 minutes. Like, he was way up there almost every single time.
Donovan really pushed Durant's and Westbrook's minutes, which he should. That was a smart thing to do. That was an advantage,
yeah,
that you have your best players playing 7 or 8 more minutes a game. That's a good way to try and steal points.
Yeah, I think that is, like, a lot gets made in the playoffs of the fact that depth matters less. And I think, you know, the example of playing Durant all those minutes, the example of, you know, Durant playing all those minutes is, you know, evidence of that. But I think the flip side of that is that depth still can matter, because if your team is like the Warriors and has, even with, you know, maybe somebody like Anderson Varejao, who, you know, everybody kind of tears their hair out, what is he doing in there? If you have the depth to be able to keep afloat with your non-stars out there for just long enough to get them some rest, that it can really give them a boost as they close those games out. Because, again, the Warriors' best guys, I think they're smarter players in general in terms of decision making. But I also think that, you know, fatigue does play a role there, and how much of it I can't really say. But I remember in a couple of the games watching Durant just being like, you know, he's got no legs. Like, you could see it on his jump shot where he was fading down the stretch. And, like, I think it was Game 6 where maybe it was Game 7. I can't remember which of them now. They're kind of blending together to me. But, like, he had a couple of, like, really dumb turnovers that it was just like, was that, like...
It was probably both.
Yeah, was that a product of fatigue, you know? Like, was it... because, you know, there's a lot of... not to get too, like, I don't know, outside of the scope of basketball, but there's a lot of, like, scientific studies that, like, people make worse decisions when they are fatigued, which is, like, an intuitive thing, but... you know, if you are tired at the end of the day, you're much more likely to make bad choices about what you eat, for instance. especially if you're me.
Or I just make bad choices about what I eat no matter what.
but yeah, so I think that there's, you know, the Warriors' depth has served them fairly well, even when Kerr has played, you know, maybe a little bit bigger rotation than would seem optimal in the playoffs. But you know, I'm also just a guy who writes about the stuff on the internet, and Kerr's looks like he's about to be a two-time championship winning coach. You know, so obviously you have to take everything that I say with a grain of salt and have some level of respect for what he's doing over there.
So basically we sound like we're kind of in the same place with this. If everything goes right for the Warriors, this could be a sweep. If everything goes wrong for them, they're probably still winning in 6 games outside of a crazy injury. And most likely, it probably just ends in 5.
Yeah, I think 5 is, you know, that was my pick.
What are the odds on picking them in 5? Have you seen that?
I haven't looked at the Vegas odds. I know... The weird thing is, I looked at the odds for the series that came out on Vegas, like, just the series odds, not, like, in how many games. And I think that the series was, by the odds, was closer than what it was when Oklahoma City won against the Spurs, and that when that line came out for Oklahoma City versus the Warriors.
That's
which
the,
just
pub,
seem...
the public. That's the public. They're bet the public's with LeBron. is what
yeah,
I think that is.
It's got to be, because that just didn't make sense to me. It seemed like the Warriors were almost like 4-1 favorites against the Thunder going into the series, which, like, I thought that was insanely high. I think that's much more reasonable number for this series, but I think the actual number is like they're like 2-1 favorites, which honestly seems low to me. Maybe this is a lack of imagination on my part, but the scenarios in which
I think you're right. So right now, I'm trying to find. I can't believe how hard it is to find series odds by games. The Warriors are only 5.5-point favorites in Game One.
That seems low.
Yeah, it's like I haven't gambled in years, and I'm just like,
Well, they're especially because they're at home, so that to me seems very low. I guess there's a lot of there's a lot of weight being put on how well the Cavs have been playing, and people are I think people are underselling how good Oklahoma City was playing and thinking, oh, well, if the Warriors struggled with the Thunder, then maybe they're not, you know, at their 73 win peak. But I don't think that's the case.
No.
I think that the Thunder were just really, really good.
It's a matchup thing. And the Thunder's ability to, they have what you need to play against the Warriors, much like this, how the Celtics gave the Warriors problem. You can't look. It's like an NFL, like when you're betting NFL and looking at the NFL, you can't take what a team did the week before. You have to take each individual matchup on its own and look at it. But it's you got to have a bunch of guards who can get into guys when you're playing the Warriors. That's why the Celtics did pretty well against them during the regular season. They had some ball creators that could make the Warriors guys have to play defense. Plus, you had Smart and Bradley who can be pest and chase guys around the court and really make you work. The Cavs can make the Warriors guys play defense, but unless they're throwing out a lineup of like Dellavedova, Shump, JR, LeBron, Tristan Thompson, they don't. I mean, that has the type of defensive players you need, but then you don't have the balance of the offensive players, like we talked about before. I just don't see it. I actually kind of feel bad for Cavs fans how this series is kind of getting pushed by the national media. It's like, ew, you guys, I hope you guys aren't getting your hopes up about this.
Yeah, I think that will be. I think the really interesting thing to me will be how much is Tyronn Lue really willing to put himself out there to give himself the best chance to win? Because I think that there are a lot of ways in which Matthew Dellavedova and is a better option for bigger minutes than Kyrie. Not to say that you don't play Kyrie, but maybe you don't play him that much when Steph's on the floor.
If he had gigantic balls, he'd make Kyrie the sixth man and start Dellavedova. Or start Shumpert and bring Love off the bench. As you said, you got to split all of Love Kyrie's minutes. One of those guys should come off the bench. I just don't see. I didn't think he would completely scrap Love at center versus the Hawks, and he did, because I thought that could have been a problem for them versus Atlanta. And he just went Tristan at center pretty much the whole time. Fry at center. He didn't go Love at center at them. So maybe I'm not giving him enough credit. But that's the move he has to make for them to have. Because you need one of them on the court to help with your offensive creation. But you can't have both of them on the court because it's going to kill you defensively.
Yeah. And so that'll be, you know, we kind of started talking about that initially. And I think, to me, that's the biggest thing that I'm curious to see is, I think somewhere they have to know that like Kyrie and Kevin Love kind of can't play together against the Warriors. And who's going to sacrifice minutes does Lou have the kind of buy-in to, I mean, he's been able to sit Love relatively frequently, and, you know, people kind of, Love hasn't really made too many noises about it. I'm sure it probably isn't his favorite thing in the world to be getting sat for fourth quarters, but I think it'll be interesting because I think you might need fewer minutes from Kyrie and fewer minutes from Love, or maybe about the same as Love has been getting in some of these matchups where he hasn't been doing as well or whatever. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting to me to see what he does. He has been relatively flexible. I just don't know if he has the kind of pull or buy-in to be able to say to Kyrie, we're going to play Delly, you know, 30 minutes a night, and, you know, you're going to play...
I feel like that would go so poorly.
Yeah, like, I agree. And, like, I don't know, I know a lot of people don't really like Delly or think that people overrate Delly for a variety of different reasons, which we don't need to go into here, but, like, I think he's a very solid defensive guard, and I think, you know, he has been knocking down shots pretty much all season.
Struggled in the playoffs, though.
What's that?
He's struggled in the playoffs, though. He's only shooting, where is it? He's only 28% from three in the playoffs.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, 38% from the field and 28% for three in the playoffs. But,
yeah.
I mean, you would think he's the one person on the Cavs not shooting completely out of his mind.
Yeah, and, like, that's the thing is he shot, like, that's the you have to worry about the sample size thing again there because he was 41% from three in the regular season. So, like, do you think that there's something about the playoffs that's, like, you know, rattling him, or do you think, or, like, his defense been that much better on him, or is he just missing shots?
I think he's probably just missing shots, and he's more a 41% shooter all the time? Probably not. 35 to 38, I think, is pretty reasonable for him, though.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, too, and, like, the other context there is that, like, if Dellavedova is shooting, he's probably wide open, right? Like, he's not necessarily the guy that's... He's not taking the shots that Kyrie takes or, you know, that LeBron takes or that even Love takes or J.R. Smith takes. Like, he's not taking any of those kind of shots. He's, you know, he's spotting up in the corner. He's, you know, maybe LeBron is backing somebody down and kicks it out to him off of a double, that kind of stuff. But
he'll take a strange-ass floater every once in a while.
Yeah, he does like his floater. I actually one of the other things that's interesting about Delly is I actually kind of like him running the pick and roll a little bit better than I like how Kyrie runs pick and roll.
He hits the roll, man.
Yeah, Kyrie, the pick and roll is not really a pick and roll. It's more really like more just like a pick and then Kyrie ISOs on the big guy.
It's a pick and shoot.
Yeah, it's a pick and get out of the way so I can get these buckets.
and he does it fairly well. Yeah, I'll give him.
Yeah, I think it's he's very successful at it. I don't think that, like, if you looked at, like, probably like the points per play or whatever on him running the pick and roll versus Delly, like, overall he's probably still better. But I just think in terms of, like, how you kind of think about running a pick and roll, his Delly kind of runs it like you would expect, and Kyrie just kind of uses his overwhelming talent to score. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of like a sidebar, but I just think that that's going to be, as I stutter all over myself.
Oh, it's all right. That's where we're here to make fools of ourselves. Yeah, that's what we do.
I think that's going to be the really interesting thing to me is what the minutes distribution is going to be for Lou. How flexible is he going to be? And does he have a plan for trying to force Steph into the lowest percentage, you know, expected value shots? Like, does he have a plan for forcing Steph to try to only shoot mid-range jumpers or to, you know, significantly increase the distribution of his shots that comes from, you know, the mid-range? if he can do all of those things, I think they still lose. But I think it's a lot. I think it's a lot closer than maybe we're anticipating. But I don't know that, you know, he's going to be able to do all of those things, especially.
I just don't see them having
politically.
The big. Yeah, I don't see the bigs like what even what being able to do what San Antonio was able to do. Aldridge might not be the fleetest of foot, but he's long. Tristan Thompson can move a right laterally, but I also feel like Steph can shoot over him easier than he could Aldridge.
Tristan is very good moving in space and using his feet to stay in front of guys, but
he crouches really low.
Yeah, but then, yeah, exactly. He sacrifices a lot of his size in order to do that, and then on top of that, he's not a super long guy, especially for if you're playing him like as essentially a center, which is defensively kind of like the role that he's in. One more thing I think that if I was Lou, I would try when they go, well, most of the time I think I would try, even when they go with the death lineup, I think I would try LeBron on Draymond, because I think you need somebody that is smart enough to think ahead of what Draymond's going to do and limit his playmaking. And so I think and LeBron is still such a super athlete that he could even, when they do that pick and roll with Steph and Draymond, and then they give it to Draymond in space with the 4-on-3 to try to make plays, I would even have LeBron kind of sag off of him a little bit, and then as soon as he puts the ball on the ground, you know, kind of crowd him, try to get up and crowd him to make him uncomfortable. I think he's probably probably the second most important player to their offense, which again is maybe a counterintuitive idea because Klay is such a great scorer for them. But I think that Draymond does such a multitude of things for them that if you can limit Steph by icing everything, and if you can disrupt Draymond's playmaking, again, maybe you nudge your percentages up slightly. I don't know that it makes a difference, because those guys are really good and they can execute above and around those game plans. But those are the kinds of things that, you know, maybe you try out.
Did you want to see the Warriors or Cavs win? Or do you just not give a crap?
I've gone back and forth about this, because, like, there's part of me that is really, like, so, you know, I started caring about basketball because I was a huge Michael Jordan fan as a kid. And Yeah, and so, like, there's part of me, the hard part about it is that, from that perspective, you know, either the Warriors now overtake the Bulls as the greatest team of all time, or LeBron gets another notch in his belt in terms of his climb to try to overtake Jordan as, you know, kind of the consensus greatest player of all time. So there's really no winning if you like the 90s Bulls.
I think you saw enough of winning. I'm a Knicks fan. I think you got enough of that. So I don't really want to hear you complain about the 90s.
I know,
Bulls.
But now I need to you know, protect the legacy of my favorite team that I watched growing up. I have to be a curmudgeonly old man. Isn't that how that works?
I hate you.
But actually, I think the Warriors have had such a historic season. I think I probably would say them. Although, you know, Draymond kicking people below the belt and kicking people in the face last series kind of got under my skin. I think it'd just be cool to see them complete the run. You know, I would have much more memories of this year than when I was, you know, 10 years old when the Bulls had their crazy season. So I think probably I'd like to see them complete sort of the historical aspect of it. But it is going to be really annoying if LeBron loses and people are like, oh, he's 2-5 in the finals. It's like, well, he made it to the finals 7 times, dummy.
that's what bothers me about it. I'm going to root for the Warriors because I Steph's my favorite player. It's funny, LeBron was my favorite player I've ever watched, and that transferred to Steph kind of quickly. And I've always rooted and defended LeBron, and now I'm rooting. This is going to be the second straight year I've pretty much rooted against them in the finals. It's a weird play. Like, LeBron made me root for the Heat, and I never root for the Heat in these playoff situations. Like, that's not.
Oh, yeah, he started as a Knicks fan. Rooting for the Heat is sacrilege.
Yeah, and I really don't like Wade, but I've always rooted for LeBron, and I liked Bosh too. So it hurts me that LeBron's gonna have to catch a bunch of crap over stupid stuff still. But it's fun seeing history, and to see the Warriors finish this out would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's basically where I'm at. And so I don't know. Maybe it's also just me protecting my own fragile ego because I think the Warriors are going to win. So it's just easier to just be like, yeah, I guess I'm going to root for the Warriors.
It's fun being right about the things you say. Anyone would be lying not saying that. All right, Kevin, thank you. Do you have anything out there you want to plug or have people see?
You can follow me on Twitter. It's at NBA Couchside. I may start writing again. I had like a tweet storm about that last night, about whether or not I was going to keep doing it. I think I ultimately came down on I just need to tweet less and write more, so that'll probably be the Twitter.
It's so much easier to tweet than write a story, though.
It is, but I want to try to get better about balancing my Twitter addiction and maybe weaning myself off of that and being more of an actual writer again. But yeah, anyways, follow me on Twitter as I kind of say that I'm not going to tweet very much. but yeah, I'll still be tweeting out links to things that I write if I do write them. But right now I don't have anything out there. So.
All right, Kevin writing would be better for us all, because as you heard on the podcast, he knows what he's talking about. And that wraps up the NBA Finals edition of the Podium Game Podcast.